You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Today, my guest is Barbara Hand Clow, who is returning to do a second show since we opened so many doors during our first visit together. Barbara is an internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher, author, and Mayan calendar researcher. Her numerous books include The Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, Catastrophobia, A Liquid Light of Sex, and The Mayan Code. She has taught at sacred sites throughout the world and maintains an astrological website, www.handclow2012.com. So let's welcome Barbara back to the show now. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm great, Lance. Thanks. And if they go to the website, if they want the free astrology, they should go to Astroflash.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they could miss that.
Yeah. I wouldn't miss Astroflash for the world. It's probably the most comprehensive analysis of astrology and Mayan cosmology and intuitive indigenous wisdom on the Internet. And it's free.
Yeah, that's very complimentary of you. And I've been having a wonderful time with it because I get to really tune into people on a regular basis, which I really enjoy.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it's my favorite piece. In fact, I kind of hold my breath when it comes out. It's like, oh, boy, I get to read another Astroflash. Now, you traditionally publish that on the at each new moon. Is that correct?
Right. Each new moon and then each one of the seasons, equinoxes and the solstices. And then it's put in that context. In other words, every time we come up to a new season, and, of course, we're coming up close to the fall equinox now, then what happens is a new field goes into place that actually lasts for 3 months. And then where you really get a lot of wisdom is to use the new moons in order to further understand the process of the season. So that's kind of how I do it. Do you feel like I'm speaking to you when you read it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that's how I'm doing it. And the reason that I'm doing it that way is when you really feel like you're speaking to people, then you also can hear them. And so when I'm working on the site, one of the things that's the most fun for me is that I can actually really feel and sense all of the people who are tuning into it. So it's kind of a special experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It kind of works like that on the radio, too.
I think that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the key is authenticity. So
and feeling. Like, for example, and you have, too. You've also written a wonderful book. And I think when you can feel and hear the audience that's going to be tuning into you and reading your book eventually, then you write it to each person. And so when they read, that's what I liked about your book when I read it, was I could
really feel you
as a person coming through your book. And to tell you the truth, about 95% of what I read is not like that. I read it because I need the information or because I'm going on a journey or whatever. But it's really Barbara Marciniak's work was like that too, where you could just feel her speaking to you as
you know
what I mean, and those are the kind of books that people really love.
Yes, I loved her work as well. And another one was Ken Carey was one that impressed me at the time.
Yes, I agree with you. I could
quite poetic. Of course, there are many others that I haven't mentioned, and it's only because my mind isn't functioning fully right now.
Well, it isn't. No, all of us are dealing with Mercury retrograde. But I was going to say, also, it may be a Pleiadian characteristic.
Oh.
Also, that voice, because Ken Carey also considered himself to be from the Pleiades, and obviously Barbara Marciniak does too. And so, do you consider yourself to be from the Pleiades?
Yes, I do. I mean, I resisted it for the longest time, But I have to say that every time, the first time I read Marciniak's Pleiadian channeling at Stanford University, my eyes popped out of my head. I mean, mm-hmm. like the cartoon characters, you know, where they go boing, 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 boing. And yeah. I could not believe it completely changed my life.
Yeah, and this could be the case for many people. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, your work with the Pleiadians just is like a skyrocket beyond the moon. So I'm just soaking it in and enjoying every minute of it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Do you want to hear how I found Barbara Marciniak? I was her publisher.
Yes.
Bear & Company published the first couple of Barbara's books, and of course I was the editor at the time. And the way I found her was that I used to go to expos because I was a speaker at the expos. And then I was always doing two jobs in one, which I love, which was I was also looking for authors because I was acquisitions editor for Bear. And so I was standing in the hallway at an expo, I think it was San Francisco, and about 400 or 500 people went herding past me like a herd of cattle. They almost got me down, and so I had a press pass. I had a press pass, of course, so I could go where I wanted to go. So I just followed this herd of cows, and they all herded into this gigantic room, and there was Barbara Marciniak sitting up on the top of the stage. And that's how I found her. And then I contacted her, and at that point, she had not written anything. She just had a lot of channelings that had been taped. And so, so we worked with her to transcribe those channelings and to make the first book was Bringers of the Dawn. And so that's how I found her, and it was kind of a wonderful experience.
Wow, that is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, where are things headed today? I mean, are the Pleiadians still giving guidance to people? Some claim that the channeling realms have become distorted through various dark channels.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one place to judge that would be to go to Astroflash. Because, of course, when I'm working, I use astrology as like a divination tool.
Using
the seasons and the moons, I just give you a circle of cosmic energies and planetary forces. And so then I also combine issues connected with the end of the Mayan calendar here. But really what I'm doing is I'm using these as focusing tools in order to see what's really going on. And we are coming into an amazing period this fall. A really, truly amazing period. I'm teaching in India in early October and also in Europe in the fall. And so I have to get 4 astro flashes all done before I leave, which is extremely difficult for me because normally I go along very progressively. When it comes time for the new moon, I work on it right before the new moon and I publish it. But in this case, this all has to be in advance. And so this of course, was a Pleiadian trick to get me into doing 4 of them at once so I can see the implications of all 4, if you see what I mean.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, and so this fall, now as you know, in terms of the Mayan calendar, we're moving into the period right before day 7. Day 7 starts on November 2nd, 3rd. And when we move into day 7, we're moving into the fruition of the whole galactic underworld. That's the time period from 1999 through 2011. And when we come to the fruition point, that's when we get, you know, all the goodies off the tree, so to speak, in terms of an underworld. And the galactic underworld, of course, the purpose of the galactic underworld has been to evolve us into oneness as a species by means of technology. So we've had this huge, intense technological experience since early 1999, right after, you know, that it started out with that emphasis on Y2K, and then it just kept going all the way through everybody getting on the Internet and everybody having BlackBerries and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So this has really, really been intense, and like it's been, at least it's made me dizzy because I'm not even technological. And yet, whether you're technological or not, everybody has been pulled into this. And so when you try to think of fruition of an evolutionary development like that, it must have something to do with us actually being all interconnected with each other during day 7, which starts in November. And that's a pretty amazing thought, you know, to start to, even if you resist technology, to still...
Right.
surrender to the possibility that maybe something's going on here that's actually moving us into being a unified species. And I think it is.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it seems like the way that I'm sensing this is that we're gradually or slowly moving into back into an empathic and psychic communication with one another in unity. So
yeah, that's true.
These devices are like little stepping stones, and there will be glitches in the system where maybe there's an electromagnetic pulse and the computers will be down or the grids will be down, and people will start to realize that they can't rely on the gadgets, which are, you know, have no fail safes, nor do the satellites. And it's even conceivable that all of the world's wealth could be wiped out in one EMP.
Yeah, and I agree with you, but I also think that there's another possibility.
Mm.
And what makes me think this is possible is because I don't know if you've ever done any work with the phone psychically. People are actually work as phone psychics. You've probably talked to a psychic on the phone. In other words, there are
people who actually can
use the phone as a psychic tool.
So
as far as I can tell, with these different tools that we have, like phones or computers or whatever, all they really are tools that allow us to go to another level. But it's possible that the tools themselves are part of this process, and that's where I don't want to be judgmental about it, even though I'm not particularly technological. And I can see the bad side of technology, which is a very, very huge issue. I also think it's possible that the technology itself is part of the teaching here. So all we can do, of course, is just watch that and see.
Yes, well,
but what
of
I can
course.
See, yeah, but what I can see as an astrologer, first of all, understanding the Mayan calendar helps us understand what's happening in November. And then, as you know, there's also the issue of another underworld starting in March, the universal underworld. So we're really going down into the zone now, if you know what I mean. And then regarding astrology should reflect that this is happening to our species. And if it doesn't, something funny is going on. And also astrology should give us some answers about what the key issues are as we deal with such a major shift. And so by being forced to look at 4 months of this astrology instead of only 1 month, I can just see some incredible things that are unfolding here at this point. And basically, the real new energy actually starts coming in strongly during the new moon in Virgo, which is September 8th. That's next Wednesday.
Ooh.
So, right after Labor Day. And so we have a Virgo new moon. And then we, of course, have a full moon right after, 2 weeks after that. It's always like that. And the Virgo new moon seems to be setting up an agenda for a major wave of compassion on the planet. A major, major healing wave of compassion that's going to be triggered by something. Of course, I don't know exactly what that is. Astrology doesn't predict, specific events. Astrology
right.
will just show you a tendency
right.
for something to happen. But the reason I know this is a really big deal is, first of all, I can see this wave of compassion coming in through this new moon. But then what happens is the full moon occurs only a few hours after the fall equinox, which is actually quite unusual, a configuration like that. And then the full moon itself strongly aspects the equinox. The fall equinox is when the sun goes into 0 degrees Libra. I think you're probably aware of that. And
okay.
So that's just what happens. The equinox just means, like, in the spring, the sun goes into 0 Aries, and then in the fall it goes into 0. That's all that it means. But the full moon itself, a few hours after the equinox, is the sun in 0 degrees Libra, and then the moon in 0 degrees Aries. And so what this means that this wave of compassion that the new moon seems to predict, it means, judging by the fall equinox and the full moon, that this is actually really going to happen. This is like a kind of like a double whammy. And I don't know whether this is going to be the planet waking up and realizing that we've lost, we're losing many species in the sea, And the planet starting to really wake up to the implications of for example, the oil spill in April. I don't know exactly what it is, but boy, something's going to happen.
Oh. Well, of course, there's so many things that could happen on so many different levels that have been, it seems like we've been chugging along, and all of these things that have been building haven't happened. So I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, I found that experience of chugging along and yet feeling like you're getting nowhere very frustrating.
And then
you're probably aware that during July and August, we had a series of major cardinal T-squares. People probably been talking to you about that. I probably did when I was on the last time. And T-squares set agendas into form. So if you watch closely, there's actually more actually going on that is not really totally breaking through the surface. Like I was laughing this morning and saying to myself, could we just have a coffee movement instead of a Tea Party movement? You know what I mean? But you have to admit that with the Tea Party movement, even though you and I probably wouldn't feel very much in sympathy with what's going on there, people in that movement are really attempting to create societal changes. They're really organizing and working to create societal changes. And even though you and I might not like the direction that they'll go in, all that's going to do is create a counter movement because they've gone in. So if you see what I mean, in other words, things are actually happening at this point.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to be very emotionally affected by these kinds of changes this fall. That's certainly what the astrology is indicating, that we're going to be integrating these changes that we're experiencing on an emotional level. Going to be a period of deep feeling.
So now that takes us up to about the September period. What kind of major maelstroms do you see after September, say in October and November, heading towards the end of day seven? And what is the significance of the end of night six? How does that usually manifest as it wanes or as it finishes up? It must have some kind of swan song that it sings.
Yeah, well, the way I would put it would be, and I think we actually talked about this in the other show a little bit, what we attempt to decode is what is night six resonating with. And
right.
So when we go back into the other underworlds, this is the previous night sixes, we find that during night six of the regional underworld, which was about 14,000 BC up until about, or 14,000 years ago up until about 6,000 BC, something like in that range, what we see there is a series of cataclysms. And, for example, the high point of the cataclysmic phase in the regional underworld, that's the 100,000-year-long underworld. It's the Paleolithic time for our species. The high point of night six was an actual huge cataclysm 11,500 years ago, 9,500 B.C. And so if we get into the day of the horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, I was watching in April to see what would be happening on the planet because April resonates with that 9,500 BC cataclysm.
Oh.
And so what we saw happening, obviously, was a very big cataclysm. And I don't think there's any way, regardless of what the media says, that there isn't a huge loss of life here and a huge tragedy brewing. And I think you would probably agree with me.
Absolutely.
And so it could be that what we're going to see, what the astrology would show in more in October, would be that a very big realization is going to sweep the planet. And I think that realization is going to have to do with the death of the species, probably, and also the absolute virtual necessity to end war on the Earth. It could play out as an economic collapse because the only thing that's keeping the United States able to keep on going in Afghanistan, it's continuing to hold so many troops in Iraq, the only reason that it's possible is because of the economy. So, you know, we could see an economic crash that'll finally get the United States to stop trying to be the world empire.
Yes, that would be nice. That would be a refreshing experience.
Yeah, you get a wound, you get an environmental wounding, you get an economic wounding, and then finally the emperor has no clothes, if you see what my point is.
That all has to come to an end, however that may be. And of course, you know, there are people saber rattling for World War III in order to pull us out of our economic problems because we're a debt nation. But I don't see that happening.
Do you remember back in the 50s when people were running around saying, I'd rather be dead than red? Remember that?
Yes,
well, I was running around saying, I'd rather be red than dead. You know what I mean? And so back to resignation, Lance, if we go to the national underworld, which is the 5,000-year underworld, it's basically 3,116 B.C. through 2011, what we get as a resignation point is the Inquisition.
We get
the worst part of the phase of the Inquisition in Europe, and then we also see the Portuguese and the Spaniards coming over to the New World and creating a genocide in the New World. So that's the resonation with night six, but we're going into day seven in November.
Okay.
And then we go, when we move into day seven, what we're interested in is what are we resonating with. And
right.
If you go into day seven, you see in the regional underworld, you see the development of small temple city cultures like Qatalhöyük and Göbekli Tepe and places like that in the Far East. And then in terms of resonation in the national underworld, we see the rise of science, and we start to see the beginning early stages of enlightenment on the planet in terms of beginning to use our heads a little bit for a change.
Huh.
You know, so that's the kind of shift you see. It's like the dark. It's like the darkest hour before the dawn, for sure.
Well, that in a sense, that sounds almost like the return to small communities supporting one another and growing locally and helping each other to rebuild with possibly some emergence of technology that's been suppressed for 100 years.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring...
I don't think that the powers that be are going to unsuppress the technology they've been sitting on for so long, but... there is a move afoot to bring forth technologies that are close to what the powers that be have.
And I think in terms of local networking and all of that, you know, it always looks like an economic crash is a bad thing. But the economic, for example, the housing developments during the last 2 or 3 years have forced a lot of people to start to move in together. You have people who had 3 houses who've gone down to 2, and you've got people who had 2 who've gone down to 1. You've got people who've got 1 house and they're sharing it with their relatives. With every level, it's operating differently. But it is bringing people closer together. And a lot more people are growing gardens and food at this point, not because it's a fad and you're groovy, but they're doing it because they need the food. And it was never going to work. Local trade and barter and local economies was never going to work until it actually got to the point where people are forced to do it.
Yes.
So, if you look at it that way, for example, I will be honest with you. If the United States is forced to stop attacking the world because the economy crashes, it's worth it to me to have the economy crash.
Yes.
And I don't want that to happen. I mean, because there's no way everybody is going to be very, very seriously affected by this. But when we look at the alternative, of being able to continue on this path, the United States just can't keep attacking all over the world and then have the country itself, the United States, filled up with people who come from those countries.
Right.
It doesn't work.
Right.
You don't move in 10 million Italians and then attack Italy. You know what I mean? I'm saying these things only because people have been so severely affected by the doublespeak. It's what I call the American way of always talking about everything exactly the opposite of what it really is, so that nobody knows how to think straight.
Absolutely.
We've
been, our thinking and our speaking has been subverted so that up is down and down is up and backwards is forwards and so on and so forth. And the dark side are that those who are using meme engineering have taken positive symbols and sacred geometry and they've reversed them to turn them into negatives. And so we've reached a point where we don't know what to trust. I mean, you might see a symbol on a car that's designed to make money, and that might be some kind of symbol that actually has some beautiful significance that is being subverted to sell cars. And it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and this whole problem with the elite and how they're going to be dealt with, and how I don't see how we can go on with it as long as there's a powerful elite controlling and pulling all the strings of both parties, which are designed to give us the illusion that we have some kind of say or freedom, and we're down here babbling in the rooster crow kennels, arguing and pulling each other's feathers out over nothing. So that kind of stuff has to, we must awaken to that, because there's really nothing on television, on the news, that's accurate or even close to the truth.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, the only place we can get the truth is from people like yourself and shows like these that dare to talk about what's really happening in the real world organically and in the now.
Yeah.
So, well, anyway, I didn't mean to get up on my soapbox there.
No, we both did. It must be that kind of vibration. But it was quite amazing. It sounds like you got a really bad cold, too, which is too bad.
Oh, I do. But, you know, 2 days ago, I wouldn't have been able to do this, but I'm better today.
Yeah.
The gods are smiling.
Yeah, the gods are smiling. Well, you know, what started us off, too, was just looking at the astrology that's coming up. And it speaking of Dr. Kahneman's theory about the nine underworlds, it's always so assuring to me to see that the astrology shows how what he says is going to happen could possibly happen. Now, I've only had 4 years of doing this particular kind of analysis of every month and every season, looking into what's going on in relationship to Kahneman's theory. And so far, this man is just dead right, because every time I look at the astrology decodes exactly how this whole thing could work out.
Would you care to elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, for example, speaking of a wave of compassion this fall, and a real just change in the sort of fundamental feeling nature of our species, if we're going to move out of dealing with this kind of cataclysmic, I mean, what we've been dealing with during night six, what we've been dealing with basically is we've been getting pushed into the core level of our inner wounding. Now all of us have that. All of us have a core level of wounding within. And this is something that I've written so much about, because I've written so much about Chiron. And Chiron is the planet, is the body in the solar system that rules accessing core wounding. So in my own work in catastrophobia and with Chiron, I've worked with the idea that the core wounding for our species at the current moment is coming from the series of cataclysms around 12,000 years ago. And some people may know of those cataclysms as the fall of Atlantis. Some people think of it as the fall of Atlantis, whatever it is. But we do have a global mythology of a fall from a higher state of civilization, and we're rebuilding ourselves. We're coming back up from that point in time. But psychologically, this functions as the core wound. Like, think of yourself as being like an onion, and in the very center of that onion, you've got that core wound. And then you've got all those layers over it that represent past lives and childhood trauma or whatever they are. And so the idea here would be that for the last 10 months, 10, 11 months, we've been pushed into that level of core wounding, and that most people who are tuned in at all have been dealing with very deep levels of pain and very deep levels of core consciousness, and they're working at healing themselves from that.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea would be that when day seven comes and the cataclysmic wounding healing is complete, that then, just like with any healing, we'll reach that point where we'll just go like, I did it. And it'll be a massive movement. And so the astrology is showing that during September and October, we're all going to be dealing with the parts of the core pain and core wounding that we haven't dealt with so far. Different people are at different levels and at different places with this issue. Some people have done a lot of work. Some people have done a small amount of work. But the idea would be, with the astrology seems to be saying, doesn't matter what you did, you're going to finish it, which would mean for somebody who's been avoiding it, it will be very painful. And for somebody who's been doing the work, it'll just be more completion of this.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. And astrology is really backing up that idea, because in order to go into the fruition phase, that painful dark night of the soul has to be complete.
Yeah, oh yes, absolutely. And we have been releasing for some time now eons of trauma and his past history and Earth's core memories and the rest of it, haven't we, as we've been going along?
Yeah, and I came up with a really interesting idea to this morning that may give some perspective on the oil spill in the Gulf. If you go back through the evolutionary record of the evolution of mammals, which is about the last 800 million years, this in Kalaman system, this is the second underworld that he calls the mammalian underworld. And what happens with the mammalian underworld is we have 7 days and six nights, just like we have in every other underworld. And when we go back and examine the record, that this is the paleontological and biological record for the last 800 million years, we find that at each one of the days, day one, day two, day three, so on and so forth, we find that there is an introduction of a new species of mammals, like, say, take 330 million years ago, which happens to be, I think it's day three. I don't have any of this data in front of me. But we see the introduction of fishes. Or we go back to 63 million years ago, and we find the extinction of reptiles and the beginning of placental animals. But the point, Lance, would be that there's always a cataclysm before the new stage comes in. So we have different extinctions, like the Cambrian extinction.
Uh-huh.
And what I was thinking about this morning is, if you examine the data bank, you'll find that most of the extinctions occurred on land. When we go back and look at the different species, the species in the sea tended to not have extinctions the way we do on the land, because they were protected, I think, from cosmic influences from the sky. I mean, a lot of the extinctions have been caused by meteors and pieces of supernovas and all that stuff that goes on in the sky. So one of the things I was thinking about this morning was, it would appear that this time the extinction may be in the sea. See, I think this oil spill is huge in comparison to what most people think about what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And intentionally that way.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I mean,
the global elite just wants business as usual. Just,
right.
Go shopping. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Go eat a shrimp dinner.
Right. Yeah, please, go eat one right now.
Right. Nothing to worry about. We're checking all of the fish, and we're checking all of the shellfish and the mussels to make sure that there's no problem, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The sickness and perversity of the elite is just, I don't know. I mean, it's almost laughable if it wasn't so despicable.
That leads me to another thought that I've just been having, all of these big thoughts lately, which aren't necessarily always that aren't always that pleasant because they aren't always positive, you know.
Right,
and
right.
I really, really love Avatar by James Cameron.
Oh, me too. Me too.
Yeah, and so for me with Avatar, I've been cycling through different levels with it. I'm going to go see it again because I saw it when it first came out, but I'm going to go see it again. But, you know, the basic premise of Avatar is that U.S. military forces are attacking a small planet, Pandora, in order to get something they want, which happens to be that vibrating thing, whatever that was that they were, I forget what it was.
Oh, the Palladium.
Some sort of amazing element.
Yeah.
But what they were doing is that they were willing to even destroy Pandora in order to get what they want. Wouldn't you agree in the basic premise of the movie? Well, sometimes I wonder, now notice Pandora, notice they didn't win, first of all, that's important. They didn't destroy Pandora. But sometimes when I see what's going on with the Earth, it would appear that there's some sort of outside force almost that is willing to even destroy this place to get what it wants.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I think that's another level with Avatar that at least I didn't think about when I saw it. I, for some reason, have only been thinking about this recently, that Cameron might have been trying to get us to start thinking about whether we're actually under attack from something from the outside. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, yes. I don't think there's any question about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just for me personally, I think that we have been under attack for as long as I've been on the planet, which is not long.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back at the history of mankind, I think you can see it from the very beginning of mankind and beyond that. So I think we've been under attack since the beginning, and we've never had with the exclusion of some very peaceful, maybe thousands of year periods of Egyptian rules where the feminine has dominated, where you've had
to move it to a more positive level.
Because
I don't get into these negative things unless I can really. I usually don't figure them out until I can see a solution. You know, I'm like that as an astrologer. I would never say negative unless I could see the solution. If you see what I mean.
Thank you for pulling me out of the rut there.
Well, no. I mean, seriously, this is a topic I don't think I've ever brought up before, probably especially in public. But the reason I'm willing to talk about it is consider the following possibility.
Okay.
If this is what's going on, let's assume this is what's going on, then if you look at the way we're being treated at the current moment, the whole attack is based on the premise that the people on Earth won't realize that they're being attacked.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't you agree? Everything is set up so that you're not supposed to know that this is going on.
Yes.
Meanwhile, if we look at the new consciousness movement and we look at all of the awareness that people are building on this planet, a whole lot of people are figuring this out, including possibly James Cameron. Wouldn't you think that we'd have the end of the game if people figured the game out?
As
people are ignorant and can't see that something like this is going on, then even if that isn't the final step to getting out of it, at least one of the steps to getting out of this would be to figure it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, if I were on their side, I would be throwing up more smoke and mirrors and, you know, setting off a firebomb here and a virus over there and keep us so distracted that we didn't have time to figure it out. But they've been doing that, and we're still figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. I think that we're beginning to see the man behind the curtain, and he may just be a pathetic little old wizened man that, you know, is pretty sad and pathetic.
Yeah.
You know,
and then the other side of this that I dealt with this in the Mayan code, there's another issue here, which would be the issue of exopolitics.
Oh, yeah.
And the issue of exopolitics is that Earth is under a quarantine because we're a violent and abusive species, and that if we wake up and stop being a violent and abusive species, then we're going to be back in cosmic connection, you know. In other words, yeah. The quarantine gets lifted, and then we become part of the Galactic Federation and the Universal Society and all of that kind of stuff. You know.
Yeah.
So another thing the elite tries to do, and I'm really talking about this with you, trying to decode something here, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Another thing the elite sets up is if you think that you're under attack from some kind of outside agency, then the first thing you're going to do is you're going to shut out any connection whatsoever with the cosmic connection.
Right.
In other, you follow what I mean?
Yes,
so,
I do.
So we may be under attack by some squirrely little weirdo coming from some ex-planet out in some galaxy where they're trying to get something here because they're trying to survive.
Yeah.
You know, and then we could miss the fact that our protection is the cosmos itself. In other
That's
words,
right.
there's always going to be a bad guy here or there. You see
That's
what I'm
right.
getting at?
That's right.
I haven't really thought this whole thing through exactly, but I have a feeling it fits with some of the things that you think about, actually.
Well, you know, that would be a very good technique to throw us off, because then we'd be throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and all the elite have to do is just keep the pressure up that aliens are bad, they're out to get us, we've got to fight them, you know, they're going to eat us up for dinner. And,
like,
of course,
like that movie Signs, remember that one? The little green
man.
Yeah, I mean, that type of thing. And that's what that's what continually throws people off from just feeling comfortable about the goodness of the cosmos itself.
And we know, you and I know, that it's a benevolent cosmos, a loving cosmos, an organic and breathtaking creation that is here to serve us and cooperate and be with us. And so all of this distortion, all of these distortion fields and negativity are not real.
Yeah. That's right.
But,
and then judging by this issue of night 6 and then day 7, because all of this cataclysmic consciousness and memory has been awakened, it's really moving us toward facing this and trusting that there's a good outcome coming here.
Yes. Now, what do you think about several of my guests and several others that I've read talk about the potential of an incoming flux of energies, and they call it, for instance, Robert Cox refers to this in his books as the pillar of celestial fire, pillars of celestial fire, and he ties together Egyptian and Sumerian and many other spiritual cultures together, but the bottom line is that periodically there is a corrective energy that comes in outside of us, and it is a corrective energy that infuses a kind of an ethereal spiritual energy into material matter. Another of my guests refers to this as a corrective energy that's designed to correct some of the fallen attributes that have, you know, gone astray of their own. Do you buy any of that, or are you more, is that just kind of pie in the sky if we're at this point?
Well, I've got two things to say, and I haven't read the Celestial Fire material, so I can't comment on his work. But first of all, we're a unit here, the Earth and the Moon and then the planets and the solar system, and then we're within a galaxy, then the galaxy is within the super galaxies and so on and so forth. So we're a unit within a larger field, simply put. And certainly makes sense to me that there would be corrections in the larger field, because the larger field could not continue to grow and thrive and change unless there were periodic corrective process going on. It just makes sense. So it makes sense to me that when there's a larger correction, and I can, as now speaking from the Pleiades, because I can do that too, the whole Pleiadian system is in the middle of a larger correction. And I can just say that to you because I participate in it. And so wouldn't it make sense that as the larger levels in of the field that we exist in, as a correction occurs there, then of course it occurs here. And I think one of the best signs that that's true are crop circles. because I've been studying crop circles for 25, 30 years, and two of the chapters in Alchemy of Nine Dimensions are about crop circles, because crop circles are literally a cosmic flow of information, and what they do is they tell us what's going on in the bigger field.
Uh-huh.
So you can use crop circles to read for these kinds of corrections or changes in the larger field. And the crop circles this summer in particular have just been incredible. They've been, many, many of them are almost commentaries on the nine-dimensional system that I brought through in alchemy. Many of them have they're filled with commentaries about this dimension and that dimension and how this dimension fits with that dimension.
Whoa.
And there have been in previous years a few crop circles that did that. But this year, a third to a half of them are showing that kind of evidence. Now,
whoa,
as you know, in the Pleiadian agenda and then in alchemy, the Pleiadians said that at the end of the calendar, we would become a nine-dimensional species. As you know, we talked about that on our last radio show. So
uh-huh.
The idea seems to be that there is some kind of larger correction going on, which is strongly affecting this planet. I think that's absolutely true.
Oh, well, of course, Carl Kellerman says we're in a pre-wave right now, which leads us into the ninth,
yeah.
Which comes in, what, February of next year, or is that March?
That's March 9th, 2011.
And then
the pre-wave thing was really interesting. Of course, I participated in teaching at that point. And, of course, I've been, you know, sensitive to the pre-wave. And what I find interesting about the pre-wave issue is that Kalaman just came out and said, if you don't join in on this consciousness and become part of it, you know, if you don't make an intention for this next level to come in March on the universal underworld, then he's saying, how can you expect it to happen if you don't intend it? And he did a really good job of going right to square one about the fact that what happens here happened because of what we're creating. You see that?
Very good.
And so that's, yeah. And so at first I didn't resonate with what he was talking about. For some reason, it didn't strike me. And then the week, fortunately, I had set up teaching anyway, like I'm teaching right during the beginning of day seven. I mean, I'm almost always teaching at these key points, but I don't necessarily know what I'm resonating with until I get there. You see what I mean? I didn't understand what he was talking about until a week before the conscious convergence. That was July 17th and the 18th. And then all of a sudden, I remember waking up one day and going, Barbara, you are such a dodo. You know, you of all people know that things don't happen unless you intend it and then follow through on it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So Kalaman really nailed everybody beautifully. He just came forth and said, okay, you're either doing this or you're not doing it.
You right,
know? I thought it was great.
Yeah, I love the way you put it. And it turned out to be quite an auspicious weekend, that those
yes.
two dates were extremely powerful. It changed me. It changed people in my life. It changed, I mean, I could see it happening all over the place.
I could too. I agree.
Yeah. So I was definitely there in intent. There was no question about it. And
we needed
so.
It too, you know, because these T-squares throughout the summer have just kept, I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like I've kind of been nailed to a cross. I've noticed, though, that under the influence of these T-squares, I've noticed that I'm getting a lot done. Now, it's exhausting. And
yeah,
it's
yeah.
a drag, but every
yes.
day I'm doing it. You know what I mean? So these T-squares
yeah.
have been good because T-squares do motivate people to get things done.
Yes, yeah. Well, now, so what is coming up on the horizon from this point forward that we need to be aware of that without stepping on any bear traps?
I think we really need to allow ourselves to open up our hearts. And I know that sounds really trite, but assuming that there is a very big wave of compassion coming in. This is a cosmic compassion. Then just like in tending the prepulse, you know, if it's happening, but you keep your heart closed, you're not gonna receive that energy. And when you open up the heart isn't just about joy. The heart is also about pain. So to just be explicit about it, if it is true that a lot of species are dying right now, we need to be conscious of that. Like I live in Vancouver. I'm actually Canadian. And the other day, I walked down by the ocean in Vancouver, and there was a 75 to 100 foot long gray whale right in English Bay. It was about off the shore. You could almost touch it.
Wow.
And the shore was filled with hundreds of people, and they were in like a meditative state. And I didn't ask anybody what was going on, okay? Because I didn't want to break anybody's feel. You know,
right.
I just didn't want to. I think that they were meditating with that whale to help it get out of the bay.
Oh.
And it did move out of the bay. The Coast Guard came in, helicopters came in, looked like they were going to try to do something about it, and finally that whale just simply swam out of the bay.
Wow.
As far as I know, it hasn't returned. It's okay. Now, there is something sad about species dying, which I think we can be convinced is occurring right now, and yet are people tuned into that?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying right now we're there, Lance, because I can't say I'm tuned into it. I am thinking a lot about all those turtles. They took all of the turtle eggs off the beach in the oil spill area, and they buried them all in the sand in Florida, figuring that they might hatch and swim out to sea. They did that about a month and a half ago.
Huh.
So I am tuned into those turtle eggs and wondering if the problem is, are they going to have the instinct to know what to do when they hatch on a strange beach? Do you see what I mean?
So I'm
tuning in whenever I can, but we're not getting any information because nobody wants anybody to get the truth.
I know.
You know?
Top secret. Do not approach.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've got a cold right now, which is clearing, you know? But what if you're actually feeling, one of the issues here is whether the algae is going to die because of those damn chemicals, and then the loss of the algae is going to throw off the balance of the ocean and the current. That's one of the potential issues here. Well, maybe you have a cold because you can feel the pain of the algae. In other words, what I'm saying is with this new moon, September 8th, I think we need to intentionally open our hearts to what's really happening right on our planet. Very careful right now about not resonating with it and not seeing it.
Mm-hmm. And not focusing on the negative or the potential possibilities that the powers that be might want us to be focusing on.
Yes, it's not about negatives. For example, we've had a series of extinctions, and through the mammalian underworld, the 800 million year evolution of life forms. And every time an extinction occurred, a new species came forth. So this is really about life and death, and it's not about whether it's negative or not. If you see what I mean. Now it's perfectly fine to be negative about a corporate policy of British
Petroleum. Oh, yes.
That's not part of it.
Oh, yes, of course.
Right.
Be negative about the right things, for crying out loud.
And learn some things. Like British Petroleum was all involved with the fall of the Shah of Iran back in 1979. You know, there's all kinds of things that people should be learning about British Petroleum, you know? In other words, it's one thing to understand, to know what corporate agencies are up to, and then it's another thing to be taken over by negativity.
Yes. Well, you know, you said something that kind of triggered a thought here, that we are the new species. We are the chrysalis that's turning into the butterfly, and we are about to be birthed with Earth and the rest of the cosmos. So
that's
how
right.
that happens is, you know, is such a big mystery. We can't even begin to fathom or imagine what that might be like. But out of all this chaos and rubble and destruction, it is possible that the light and the creation will step in and everything will be transformed and lifted up. But we also have to do the work.
And yeah, you just gave me an interesting thought. There's something about the way you think that triggers me, and I guess it's vice versa. But, you know, 63 million years ago, the dinosaurs went extinct. And then the next thing that happened is we had small placental animals and eventually the evolution up to us. What if the global elite is a great big dinosaur?
Yeah. Very interesting.
And what if what's going extinct right now is the ability to control humanity and to create these kinds of negative forces that are so negative for the planet?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Now, that's brilliant.
Now, we're supposed to think... Well, we're supposed to think...
That's worth imagining.
The global elite would like to have us think that all humans are the dinosaur, okay?
You're right.
And you know, but I'm sorry, I don't kill animals, and I don't put chemicals, and I don't do those things. We know who does that. You see what
That's
I mean?
Right.
Yeah, and so we've
got
to strengthen the sense of what's in our minds and in our own hearts and consciousness.
That's right.
And so, thank you for giving me the chance to articulate this, because as this wave of compassion comes in, we need to be in that wave and with that wave and driving that repulse up to universal consciousness so that we are the ones who make the global elite into a dinosaur.
Uh-huh. All right, I'm with you on that one. That's a brilliant new meme for us to seed into consciousness.
Yeah, because it is like
that
a dinosaur. And I mean, I don't want to be so negative about dinosaurs, you know, because dinosaurs, I'm sure, were wonderful. But the problem with dinosaurs was that they became such big animals in relationship to the ecosystem that they finally went extinct. But, you know, who's the big animal in the ecosystem that's too big for the ecosystem right now? It's the corporate, it's the multinational
military-industrial complex.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Let's put the military in there for sure.
And Big Pharma, if you want to add that.
Yeah,
I mean,
let's put Big Farm in there.
Yeah, and then of course you've got Wall Street and the bankers, and I mean it's a bottomless pit.
Yeah,
you know,
anybody who thinks that they're big enough, to decide what to do with this planet, is part of the extinction.
That's right. Absolutely. I have a quick question for you before I think we're getting close to the end, but I have a quick question for you. Somebody mentioned that on the pyramid, the Mayan pyramid, that there are 9 levels, but at the top level there's a kind of a room and it has 4 doors. I didn't know this before, and I don't know if this is true, but is there any significance to the 4 doors? Does that relate to the 4 directions or the 4? I mean, does it mean anything at all, or do you know anything about that?
Well, Lance, you know what? You're really leading to a good one now. I spent the night up there, back in that room, back up in 1989. So I'm real familiar on the top of that pyramid. Yeah, I had to sneak in, or I had to hide in the park until all the people went away.
Oh, my God.
And it was not only a night, it was a nightmare. but what that is telling us is, in the universal underworld, that our species is of the species of the 4 directions. Remember, in my work, I'm always talking about how we live in the 3rd dimension and we need to be attuned to the 4 sacred directions. And so what that's telling us is that our species is the birth of our species, and the conscious spiritual consciousness, enlightenment of our species, is the issue of the universal underworld. And so these are really, really great, clear thoughts to put into place, you know, because then as the corporations and the power falls away, because it has to if it continues to destroy the planet, then we can hold our own position clearly with open hearts while this extinction... See, the problem is the extinction's going to go on all around us. All the businesses, all the banks, everything is going to be going extinct all around us. And I think that's a great example of how clear you need to be in your mind and in your heart during a time like this. And the astrology is showing, I mean, of course, in this case, it'll be an astroflash, but the astrology is giving all kinds of cues as to how to do that, because as human beings, we need a lot of information about how to accomplish something like that.
Right.
But I think we've identified the goal pretty well.
I beg your pardon?
I think we've identified the goal quite well.
Oh, yes.
And which I think is really great. When I came on this show, I didn't have any sense of that.
Well, I didn't have any sense of anything. I was just kind of in the ozone when we started.
You're busy dealing with a cold that you got from grieving with the algae. I don't know how much time we have. We start a little later, so we might have a few more minutes. Speaking of your book, I really like the way you dealt with masculinity and femininity in your book. And your basically gay and I'm not, but it doesn't matter who you are in terms of understanding femininity and masculinity, if you know what I mean. And this fall, Mars and Venus are traveling together continually in the sky, in Libra and then in Scorpio and then going into Sagittarius. And when Mars and Venus travel together in the sky, there is a constant and continual resolution of male-female harmonics. And that's one of the astrological aspects going on this fall. And so what it tells us is that if people can resolve their own male-female dynamics, then they're going to be part of this clear movement toward this new level of consciousness. But that's just one of the elements in the astrology, just as an example.
Well, I see something for myself that I'd like to share briefly. For one thing, you can't be gay if you're not having sex.
That's good.
But I do see something on the horizon, which is a shift beyond male and female polarization into androgyny. Mm-hmm. And that is a unity with the sensuality and the sexuality of the planet, the plants, the stars, all of it at once in waves and pulses. And I believe that we're moving towards, or that I will be moving towards, a harmony with all that is, and it will require nobody but myself and the galaxies to impulse me. So I'm seeing that as a viable direction for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting process, you know, to have been one, married and divorced, and then gay, and then not gay, and androgynous, and I'm just excited about whatever is next.
Mm-hmm.
So, and life is unfolding its magical mystery tour.
Mm-hmm. Well, that
and
Mars,
you're definitely
Venus,
part
Mars,
of it.
Yeah, and the Mars-Venus transits all fall are going to favor that intention on your part.
Oh, wonderful.
And everybody else too, because this is certainly always a core issue for anyone, as far as I can see. If it's not,
wonderful.
I think you're not paying much attention to your life, you know?
Right.
What I loved in your book was in your 20s, everything just happened to you. And I was very different. When I was in my 20s, I was very Saturnine and very deliberate. Of course, I was a mother with children.
Different.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's certain kinds of actions that aren't appropriate when you have that responsibility. But so I enjoyed reading about you.
Right.
And I love it when people tell their story.
Oh, me too. I just love listening to people's stories because I learn from everybody. You know, I think we're living holographic libraries, and somewhere out there must be a holographic library that we can pull each other off the shelf and enjoy each other.
Yep, that's true.
But, we didn't get to talk about, I wanted to talk about some other things, the Akashic Records and this and that and the other thing, but we'll have to have another chat soon.
Have you read the Mind Chronicles?
Do you have any last words for everybody? And also, please be sure to mention your site where people can find your free Astro Flash, which is absolutely the most valuable tool on the Internet.
Well, okay, so for an update on this conversation just continues, go to handcloud2012.com to Astroflash.
All right. All right, and you'll be traveling all over the world pretty soon, yes?
Actually, all around the world. We literally
oh,
are going to we're going to fly to India from Canada, and then we're going to go all the way around the world and do some things in Spain and Portugal and everything. And this is a trip of a lifetime. I'm very excited.
Are you Are you familiar with the Oneness Temple that's being built?
The Oneness.
There's some kind of Oneness Temple that's being built in esoteric principles. And it's supposed to be designed to raise the consciousness of the planet.
Well, it may be already built because I think that's where I'm teaching in India.
Yeah.
I think we're teaching in the largest pyramid, man-made pyramid. Pyramid on the planet, and this is for an Indian spiritual society. And one of the reasons I'm so excited about it is we're teaching about 1,000 indigenous Indian people. And
I love
teaching people from any country, but in this case, I'm gonna be working on the Mayan calendar and the Vedas, the Indian spiritual tradition, and this really wouldn't be possible anywhere except in India. So I'm very, very excited.
Wonderful. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for a fantastic show, and have a wonderful trip, wonderful and safe trip, and taking your enlightenment all over the world. And I look forward to hearing from you soon, and we'll have another fireside chat very soon.
Thank you, Lance. And get recovered from your cold. Okay, bye.
All righty. Many blessings.
Bye.
Bye-bye.